2-2 pitch. Swing and a long drive. Deep left. Way back. Gone.
Hey, everybody. J.J. Cooper, Jeff Ponce here. Another Baseball America Prospect Handbook Podcast. Prospect Podcast. We figured it was time now that we've updated our top 30s, I think four times now. We've updated our top 100 five times during the season. We're doing our org talent rankings this week, which will be out not long after you listen to this podcast. But we felt like it was a good time to kind of dive in on the state of the organizations for each organization, all 30 orgs. And we're going to do that over a series of podcasts. Six podcasts is our plan to do this, so that if whatever team you're a fan of, we're going to have it covered. Jeff, you know, how are you recovered? Speaking of trade deadline, top 30s, Cape, how are you recovered?
Yeah, doing pretty good. We got the Cape playoffs starting tomorrow. Regular season ended yesterday. I also got a little sick last week, right before the trade deadline and during the trade deadline. So, like, on top of being like balls to the wall, you know, full go all day long. I mean, we're writing up trades, and it seemed like my organizations, particularly the Blue Jays, were especially busy over the last few days. So, you know, I got some nice rest and recovery last week a little bit, and kind of ready to get back into it this week. So yeah, it's a busy time of year, but I'll say that this was probably one of the more fun Julys that we've had. Just in terms of the amount of stuff that we're doing, in terms of multiple updates in July, to the top 30s prior to the trade deadline. Then after the trade deadline, we're moving in draftees. Of course, we have the futures game. We have the draft. We have the prospect pad. So there's so much information and reporting and work that we have over the course of that month that I think it kind of really sets the tone for the second half of the year for us and kind of leading into the handbook season. So really fun month, really successful month. And, you know, thank you to all the readers and listeners and supporters out there that helped us have such a great month.
So, well, let's just dive into it. We're talking about the AL East here on the first of these pods. And let's just go, you know, let's just roll through it. Like, we'll start with the team that's on top of the AL East. Also happens to be has been back and forth. I haven't checked the standings today. Yankees and Orioles are trading this back and forth. But let's talk about the Orioles, who are a number one farm system coming into the season. And I will say, you know, they're still one of the best farm systems in baseball, but there's an expiration date coming on that, I think. And I don't mean that because they're not as good as they were or anything like that, but they've already graduated Colton Kowser. They've got Jackson Holliday up now, headed towards graduation. Kobe Mayo up, maybe headed to graduation. Heston Kjerstad could graduate. Cade Povich, who's back in the minors right now, but he's at 37 innings. He could graduate. If that happened, that would be Samuel Basayo from our remaining top five still in the, eligible this offseason. But Jeff, as you look at the Orioles overall, like, where would you kind of, like, now that the trade deadline's passed, kind of, what's your kind of idea of the state of the system right now and the state of the organization?
Yeah. I think, you know, it's sort of the best problem to have. It's not as extreme as what we saw with the Braves a couple years ago, where they graduated a lot of talented players. They traded a lot of talented players to reinforce that major league roster that's been so good over the last, you know, half a decade or whatever. There's still a lot of talent there. But I think that the sun is sort of setting on the Orioles being the top farm system in the game. And it's through no fault of their own. I mean, they haven't traded a lot of these guys at all. They've maintained a lot of that depth into the season, even moving guys like Joey Ortiz, for example. But yeah, I mean, a lot of these players are at the major league level. Jackson Holliday has a really good chance of graduating, I think, before the end of the summer. Kobe Mayo, if he hits and stays with the team, especially with the injury and the severity of the injury to Jordan Westberg, it seems like that's a possibility. He could also graduate. Heston Kjerstad isn't terribly far away from graduating, as you mentioned. Cade Povich. So then, you know, it kind of changes the top of that system a little bit when you're looking at, as you mentioned, Samuel Basayo, a Chase McDermott, who's already made his major league debut. And then, you know, some talented, very athletic, toolsy outfielders here. And, you know, Vance Honeycutt, who was their first rounder this year, Enrique Bradfield, their first rounder last year. And then Dylan Beaver's a guy that they got, and day one, a couple of years back. So it's a talented system, but for the first time in a long time, I would say that the talent sort of falls off a cliff at a certain point where you're talking more 45 high type of prospects in the remaining, you know, rankings there. So it's going to be a different handbook chapter, I think, this year. But, you know, over the last couple of years, if you've been writing the handbook chapter for the Orioles, you've done pretty well. So there's no complaints that should be had there. And they've done it the right way in terms of developing a lot of good players on both sides of the ball and getting those guys up to the majors and, you know, getting some reinforcements for, you know, a team that won 100 plus games last year and is tied with the Yankees in first place right now and looks set to, you know, probably win 100 games again this year, you know, as they start August with 67 wins.
The thing that does jump out to me after the trade deadline is I felt like I was talking to a lot of Orioles fans. And again, social media. I'm not saying it's like but I did radio also, where there was kind of a lot of almost like shock that the price that was paid for pitching, you know, by the Orioles. And I got to be honest, it didn't feel as outlandish to me as I feel like it did to a lot of Orioles fans, where they viewed the price that they paid, especially giving up Connor Norby, giving up Kyle Stowers. I feel like that they were for Trevor Rogers. They were like, really, that we're doing that. And I just was that deal and the Eflin deal. They added two starters to their rotation. I don't expect Rogers to make playoff starts from this year, but they have 2+ years of additional after this before he hits free agency. And I guess the main thing, and I'll kind of ask you this way, because I'll kind of throw it back to the prospects. So what's your evaluation of Norby and Stowers? Like, was that, I mean, I know you're a Baumeister guy, but it was Baumeister and Edsel and I'm blanking on the third piece right now, but like, did you feel like they paid too much, or is that made sense, or even a steal to you?
You know, I think if you're the Orioles, this was the time to strike when the iron was hot. We had talked about it a little bit on the Hot Sheet show in the postmortem of the trade deadline. And I really felt as if this was a point in time, and you echoed the same sentiment, Stowers was kind of getting a little stale. The expiration date on that bag of cheese was probably coming up in the next couple of days. You had to get that into the lasagna, you know. Norby, kind of similar. In a lot of other organizations, I think both of those players probably would have passed their limits. In lesser organizations, probably passed their limits some point in 2023 and were already somewhat established big leaguers. So, I think it was the right move. And the Marlins are a good situation for both of those players where they should be able to, you know, carve out some playing time, especially with some of the moves they made of, you know, trading away some of their vets, open up some playing time. And, you know, I think Norby for me has always been kind of top 100 adjacent, depending upon how excited you are about the skills. But I think is a really good player that maybe even some other systems might have been ranked higher just simply because he probably would have been one of the top three players in that system. And, you know, granted there was an injury to Westberg that might have opened up some playing time for Norby, but I think in some other ways, you know, Jackson Holliday had proven that he was ready. And so far from what we've seen in his second tenure in the big leagues, he certainly has looked the part again. So I think from an organizational standpoint, it didn't really hurt them and allowed them to reinforce that major league team, which is something that they desperately needed to do, particularly with the pitching. If you look at how they've been performing really since the beginning of June, they've been about a 500 team. It's just their struggles have not been magnified because the Yankees have struggled so much and the Red Sox have just not been good enough to sort of catch up to them and overcome some of the struggles that they had early in the season. So it's a really interesting division. I think it's something that they had to do. And you still got a long runway with this core of players and even some older vets that they can maybe even move this year to get some more reinforcements in the door. So, you know, I think if you're an Orioles fan, you have to just be happy that you're at this point. The majority of your really strong prospects, your elite prospects, all stayed with the team and are now chipping in here down the stretch.
Right. They've gotten more than, like, I think that'll maybe a lot expected in Westberg, who's become not just a regular, but a regular who has kind of claimed the job. I know he's on the IL right now.
An all-star. He was an all-star this year.
An all-star. Right. You know, I do look at this. It's one of the best lineups in baseball. And especially now with Holliday keeps hitting the way he has in his first almost week back now in his second call up. I would say with Norby, you know, I think his defensive limitations were always going to be kind of more of a problem in Baltimore, because this is a team that has so many really good defenders, quality defenders at the positions he can play, where that I think kind of gets freed up a little bit with the trade. Okay, that kind of nice little segue here, because we saw the Boston Red Sox also trade a second baseman / outfielder who can hit but has also some questions about his defense, you know, in Nick York. I look at this Red Sox, where the state of the farm system, the state of the org is, and it looks a lot more optimistic, I would say, at this point in August than it did coming into the year and it did going out of last year. But is that just me, or how do you view it?
Yeah, I think, you know, if you talk to some folks around the game, just regarding this system and the Red Sox development in general, I think the overwhelming sentiment is like things have gone as well as they possibly could, save the injury to Louis Perales, for this farm system, for the development side of this farm system. And something that, you know, I anticipated and kind of heard from some sources internally was they were likely to not trade from the top of the system and more trade players like Nick York, guys like Edison Paulino, who got moved, Cutter Coffee, who was kind of on a bit of a burner at some point this summer, and others. And I think that, you know, they were able to trade from some of that depth, reinforce the major league roster in some positions where they might have been weak. Guy like Danny Jansen adds some catching depth, but also some defensive ability behind the plate. Connor Wong has had a tremendous season this year at the plate. Behind the plate, he's one of the worst defenders of all starting full-time catchers in baseball. So I think being able to reinforce that area was a big part of it. Bringing in some pitching, some reinforcements to the bullpen, which is something that was sorely needed, especially with some of the injuries they've had, Chris Martin, others. You know, I think once again, this was sort of what they needed to do outside of making a big splashy move had a Crochet or a Scubo really been available. You know, I don't think they were a team that needed to trade assets for Jack Flaherty or trade assets for Yusei Kikuchi the way other teams that might have more championship aspirations. They were able to sort of keep that young up the middle core together in Teal, Meyer, and Anthony, as well as Campbell and some of the other pieces that have broke out here in the system. It's looking like maybe the class of the American League East now in terms of talent in the systems. And, you know, I think this is probably a top five system in the game at this point still.
So that's the thing that jumps. That's what jumps out to me here is that what you want to see from a system ideally is you have someone who breaks out, and Christian Campbell obviously is that. I would say that, like, if we're ranking the breakout prospects across baseball, Christian Campbell is going to be very high on that list. He's someone who essentially came into the season, you know, viewed as a really good org prospect, I would say. Is that, am I being too harsh or is that fair?
No, I think if you talk to area scouts, because the first day of the Cape, you know, I see a lot of my old friends in the area scout cross-checker point of view, because up to that point, I'm all pro. I went to one amateur game this year. I went to see Chase Burns against BC on a rainy day. Not everybody was there. Not everybody needed to have Burns in their coverage, and BC wasn't a super talented team. So a lot of these guys was kind of a catch-up moment. I haven't seen you since last summer, blah, 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 blah. And just a lot of questions came at me knowing that I cover the Red Sox system in season. Obviously, Alex does a phenomenal job for the handbook, but was like, hey, what's going on with Christian Campbell? Because when I saw this guy at the ACC tournament, I had this guy turned in as a good org player, you know, a hit tool guy that might get the bat knocked out of his hands. He's hitting for power. He's hitting for average. What happened? What's going on? We had heard some whispers from Red Sox player development, and they were very aggressive in kind of letting this out during spring, because I not only heard it from internally, but also heard it from like Ian from Sox Prospects, who's, you know, one of my close friends in this industry, saying, hey, the Campbell noise is really loud. And we don't know if that's just the team trying to push a player up or trying to push a little narrative, you know, around their bat speed training and stuff. It's legit. We're standing here now in August, and we had a conversation this morning. There's a really good chance this guy's going to be minor league player of the year.
I mean, so Campbell's obviously a premium pop-up prospect or improved prospect this year. But then you throw in like a what Franklin Arias has done as well. Yeah. Like, I just think that you look at this org and you would say, yeah, it's the farm system looks a lot better, especially we now have this group who's all together, who's all basically on the cusp of big league ready, which the other part that is very valuable, obviously, for a team is it's one thing to have high ceiling prospects, but they're in, if they're in low A, if they're in rookie ball, there's about five different off ramps that could derail them before they get to the big leagues. You have guys who produce in double A, you can start feeling a lot more comfortable about the likelihood that they're going to be in the big leagues than be in the big leagues before too long. What? Okay. I'll throw it out the flip side of it. What about on the pitching side with this Red Sox team?
Yeah. I think, you know, it was unfortunate with Luis Perales because he was a guy that we got really loud feedback prior to the promotion to double A. Obviously, in his second start there, first home start for Portland, I'm there in person, part of my death tour of 2024, where I just watch pitchers get injured or give up eight runs in an outing. You know, he blows out his elbow. He's now on the shelf for the entire year. It's thinner from the pitching side of things, but they do have some interesting arms. And I think that that's something that if you followed the Red Sox historically, and I've just been in the area for a long time, wouldn't necessarily consider myself a Red Sox fan, but I grew up next to Pawtucket. I saw a lot of pitchers come through outside of like that Lester Buchholz kind of combo at one point. They're not known for developing pitching. I mean, you'd have to go back to Roger Clemens to really have a standout impact arm that they've developed. They do have some interesting arms in the system. They have guys like Peyton Tully that they drafted this year, huge extension, really interesting fastball shape from the left side. I think he could be an interesting piece. David Sandlin gets really loud feedback from scouts that cover the system. He may end up in the bullpen, but this is the kind of guy where the stuff is so elite that if he can sort of figure it out, take a step forward from a pitchability standpoint, execution standpoint, he's a guy that could be on the cusp of the top 100 next year, knocking on the door of the big leagues. Then you have guys that are major league ready, like a Richard Fitz. And then, you know, some other interesting arms here, like Elmer Rodriguez Cruz was a player that, you know, I've heard through the grapevine, the Red Sox were reluctant to include in deals for relievers. Maybe some bigger names than a Lucas Sims or someone like that. Someone who has performed, who does have some upside. They got, you know, Conrad Kaysen. And then just, you know, some other sort of interesting arms. Dalvinson Reyes is a guy that jumped onto the 30 in the second to last update before the trade deadline. Really, really interesting pitch shapes with him. He's a DSL player, somebody that, you know, could be a piece. And they traded away Ovis Portis, who was an FCL guy that popped up and then had some decent performance. Another guy that's off this list pitched pretty well is, I think it's Juan Valera, who's a right-hander with some big stuff, who's had some pretty good performances and was a guy that was in consideration for the back end of the 30, honestly. If he had pitched a little bit more at full season ball, I probably would have been a little bit more aggressive with him. Wouldn't shock me if he makes Alex's list in the handbook. So there is some pitching here. It's just younger, less developed, more focused on big stuff, which is not something that typically you would have seen from a Red Sox farm team 3-4 years ago.
Okay, so that's the natural segue. If we're going to talk about the Red Sox, it makes sense that we're going alphabetical here, but we're going to go to the Yankees next. But we'll do that right after this quick break.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging. You can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. I think we're going to have an opening coming open. When it comes open, I'm going to use Indeed. Why? Because Indeed makes my job easy. When I'm hiring, it puts it all in one place. It organizes, it does the thinking for me to where I can just connect with quality candidates and do the process that we need to do to hire. That's what Indeed does. and listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Baseball America. Just go to Indeed.com/Baseball America right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Baseball America. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. The heat of summer is here. Whether you're going for a long run or just sitting by the pool, your favorite summer treat could be giving you extraordinary hydration. Liquid IV has refreshing summer flavors like Popsicle Firecracker and Rainbow Sherbet that hit the spot when you need transformative, hydrating relief all summer long. Indulge in hydration with electrolytes, essential vitamins, and clinically tested nutrients from the number one powdered hydration brand in America, Liquid IV. Did you know that blue and pink cotton candy are different flavors? I didn't until I started enjoying both of them through Liquid IV. Personally, I'm partial to the blue cotton candy. I make sure I pour some in my water bottle with some ice before I head out on a bike ride. It not only hydrates, but it's a more enjoyable way to stay hydrated. Blue cotton candy, that's my recommendation. But I've yet to find a Liquid IV flavor I don't like. Cool off your summer with the reimagined flavors of treats like Rainbow Sherbet and Popsicle Firecracker. Or make your own Liquid IV popsicles. Indulgent flavors keep your wellness rituals fresh and keep you motivated and hydrated. Find all your favorite flavors on the website. There's acai berry, lemon lime, pina colada. You can even choose from their line of sugar-free flavors like raspberry melon, white peach, and green grape. The white peach, that's pretty good too. Tear, pour, live more. One stick and 16 ounces of water hydrates better than water alone. It's powdered by Live Hydroscience, an optimized ratio of electrolytes, essential vitamins, and clinically tested nutrients that turn ordinary water into extraordinary hydration. 3 times the electrolytes of the leading sports drink, 8 essential vitamins and nutrients. Always non-GMO, vegan, gluten-free, dairy-free, and soy-free. Indulge in hydration this summer with Liquid IV. Get 20% off your first order of Liquid IV when you go to liquidiv.com and use code BA2022 at checkout. That's 20% off your first order when you shop Better Hydration today using promo code BA2022 at liquidiv.com.
You sit in traffic now, but later there's an ice cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, all your patience is paid out in gold. You remain calm through honks, bumper to bumper, and people yelling.
Come on, move!
You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
And we're back. So, Jeff, we've talked about the Orioles. We've talked about the Red Sox. The Yankees, as much as some Yankees fans seem to want to not accept this, the Yankees were actually one of the more aggressive teams at the deadline. Augustin Ramirez was our number one ranked prospect to be traded. I get it. He was a guy we talked about with the Red Sox, how someone like Christian Campbell has really kind of raised their stock this year. Augustin Ramirez very much fits that as another guy who's really done a good job of kind of raising how the industry appreciates him with a strong season, was traded in the Jazz Chisholm trade. I look at this Yankees and where the Yankees are right now, and I give them credit for making at least a needed move, a couple of needed moves to help this big league club, which is right in the thick of it. Obviously, it's been battling back and forth with the Orioles for the lead in the AL East. But at the same time, I would also say, like, this system, I feel like, has had a rough year in some ways. When you look at the minor leagues, most importantly, guys who were either hurt or haven't really progressed this year as we hope. Obviously, that starts with Jason Dominguez, who we knew was going to miss some time because he was coming back from Tommy John surgery, but he's missed more time. He's back healthy now, but you have him and Spencer Jones, who's had kind of a hot and cold season so far. Where's your kind of assessment of where the Yankees sit right now?
Yeah, I think it's only added to some of the questions around the Yankees, particularly hitting development. I think you look at a guy like Dominguez, he's still in the system because of injuries. Had he been fully healthy this year, I don't think there's any question that he probably would be playing majority of the time somewhere in that outfield, especially with injuries at certain points in the year, like a Giancarlo Stanton. He might have even been on the cusp of, another call-up here and, you know, potentially back in the fold had he not gone down with the second injury. So I think you look at somebody like Dominguez, I think the upside is still tremendous. When he's on the field, he's as exciting as anybody that's out there in the minor leagues, just in terms of what he can do in a baseball field. Play center field, he's got some speed, he's a power hitter from both sides of the plate. The contact has gotten better over the last couple of years, and the approach has always been there. He's always been a guy that works deep in the counts, takes a lot of pitches, makes pitchers really work. And that's been sort of a hallmark of Yankees hitters dating back to, you know, the turn of the 21st century here. I mean, they've always been a team that takes among the most pitches in the game per at bat. So I think he fits right in. I still like Dominguez quite a bit, but it's one of these things where he's sort of only here simply because of the injuries. Now, Spencer Jones, I think, is a different story. Jones is a guy that, just from a raw tool perspective, huge power, big speed for a guy that's his size and as athletic as he is. I think in a lot of ways you could have had him neck and neck almost with James Wood coming into the year. And Wood has really separated himself just in terms of what his play was. He's also been healthy throughout the year. But Jones has had a good, you know, run here where he's had some decent showings, but he strikes out pretty much at least once or twice a game. And the swing and miss concerns are definitely an issue. And that's kind of long been a concern with him and just Yankees development overall, is that, you know, it's a power or nothing, three true outcomes kind of development approach. And I don't know if that necessarily is conducive for a market that, you know, you're under a microscope in New York. And if you're striking out once or twice a game, you're going to end up on the back pages with some nasty headlines.
As someone who has no, who's observing this from afar, the Yankees, Red Sox to some extent as well, Mets, it's interesting to me how both the fan base and sometimes even the media views failures as as weaknesses of character, or, you know, oh, he's not tough enough. Oh, he's not, you know, he's just not built for this or whatever. It's never just allowed that a guy is got a weakness or is, you know, struggling or things like that. It's always kind of framed in much more, I would describe it as football terms, like where it's like it's treated as every game of 162 is the game that's going to either determine, you know, that whether you go to the Super Bowl or not. And again, I'm mixing my metaphors, but that's kind of how it feels from afar. And I follow what you're saying, though. It's like, if Spencer Jones makes it to the big leagues for the Yankees, he's going to strike out. And that's not because he's, you know, he's not built for the big situation or whatever. That's just the player he is. He's going to hit homers, he's going to draw walks, and he's going to strike out. But the thing that really does concern me, if I look further down on this list, there's a number of guys who I would say, like, either, like, you know, we're hoping that Roderick Arias was going to be kind of a guy who really emerged in 2024. It's been a struggle for him. George Lombard Jr. has been a little bit up or down in the Florida State League. You know, you've got Henry Lalane, you know, we just want to get to see him, you know, healthy and on the mound for a full season. There's a number of guys where it's like, okay, Chase Hampton has, you know, battled injuries. It's been kind of I would say that if you looked at the system as a whole, it's a system that's taken a step back this year as much as anything, because you can call it bad luck, you can call it whatever you want, but a lot of these guys have just struggled to have the combination of staying healthy and being productive. There's a lot of guys who don't check one of those boxes, and a lot of it is staying healthy in a lot of these cases.
Yeah, I think you have a lot of high-profile international signees here, high-profile players that were on or off the top 100 over the last 18 months. And, you know, the guy who's really been sort of the saving grace has been Ben Rice, you know, who's was an unheralded prospect out of Dartmouth, didn't play college for a couple of years because of the cancellations due to the COVID-19 season in 2020. And then, of course, 2021 for the Ivy League in particular. Ends up, you know, an older prospect. There were always some questions around, can he catch? Those questions are still there. He's probably a first baseman long-term. And, you know, how much should we trust the hitting production? He's been pretty good, you know, for the major league team. He's had his struggles here and there, but that's kind of the only guy that you can point to within this top 10 and really say, wow, like, he's had a good season and, you know, looks as if he projects as an everyday player. Chase Hampton's a guy that's been hurt. Will Warren has been up and down, though. He's been up more lately than down. And then you have a lot of these guys. I mean, they went really pitching heavy within their draft with guys like Ben Hess or Bryce Cunningham. And then you mentioned, you know, an Everson Pereira, who was a guy who was on and off the top 100, has not been healthy or productive when he's on the field. And there's some major question marks about, you know, his swing and miss and how he's sort of produced and developed as a hitter. So I just think overall there's probably a fog of sort of negativity around the system at this point. Not saying that they're not a talented system. I think if you look at this group, they're probably as tooled up, at least in the position side, as you're going to see. It's just these guys have not progressed from those tools into actual game skills.
And I would just even push back a little bit on Ben Rice. It's been kind of a hot and cold big leagues. I'm not knocking him for this. He's jumped right into the middle of a lineup in the big leagues as a rookie. But as we record this, he's hitting 200, 296, 425. The power has been there, but you are hoping for a 300 OBP from your first baseman as well. So like he's been, again, he's a 25-year-old who let's not kill it in any way. It's an acclimation process, all that. But that being said, he hasn't hit the ground where you're like, okay, this guy is, you know, putting his stamp on this is his job for the long term.
I will give him some credit, though. I think it's like a 210 batting average on balls in play. He's been really unlucky in that sense. The strikeouts haven't been bad. And if you look under the hood at, you know, plate discipline numbers, only a 19.7% chase rate, which is excellent at the big league level, 86.5% zone contact, 77.4% in zone contact, only a 10% swinging strike rate, which is actually lower than what his number was at AAA. So I think that, you know, those numbers may, you know, sort of tick back up, just laws of averages and that sort of thing. We've seen this with young players, and they get up to the big league level for the first time where, you know, sometimes the numbers don't necessarily track what we're seeing under the hood. So I think there's still some positive stuff there, but you're talking about a first baseman, not really a catcher. He's a guy that's going to have to hit to keep his position.
So that leads us to the kind of crazy Rays, the Tampa Bay Rays, who sold at the deadline more than they bought. At the same time, here we sit and they're still in it. And as much as they traded away Randy Arozarena, they traded away Aaron Civale, who's one of their big acquisitions. This is the team that sold Zach Eflin. But at the same time, I don't know if it's going to necessarily take them out of the playoff race. A lot of that kind of depends on they've gotten younger because that was kind of their plan, I think. But if Taj Bradley is this Taj Bradley, if Shane Boz is this Shane Boz, I think that they might make it through a lot of this. But the other thing that does jump out with all of this, and again, this is also the Rays' way, they're never all in for this year. They're always trying to basically delay them, you know, falling off a cliff. You look at this farm system again, and thanks in part to the development of some players of their players, but then also on top of that, some of the acquisitions they've made, I feel like this is one of the better farm systems in baseball once again.
Yeah, I would say, you know, it's maybe behind the Red Sox for me, just because I don't think the top five is as talented, but it's close. And you're talking about, you know, a handful of infielders here. They could have an infield here, right? I mean, Caminero at third, Carson Williams, he's not going to move off shortstop. Xavier Isaac at first base could play some outfield if you need him to. And then Braden Taylor, who maybe slides over to second base long term. We'll see.
You could put Trey Morgan at first out of their top 10 and say we're going to put Isaac and Chandler Simpson in the outfield.
Yeah, I mean, there's a whole lineup here. The development of Gary Gilhill, who was a projectable arm out of the Northeast, you know, that they got in the sixth round for, you know, an under $1 million bonus, right? Has really developed into one of the more exciting pitching prospects in the lower levels of the minors. And, you know, their best pitching prospect at the moment, and a guy that, you know, when he pitches, people want to know if Josh is going to see him, and, you know, scouts are out there getting looks on Gilhill. So, yeah, I think you look across the system, and then outside the top 10, they added a guy like Theo Gillian, who has some big upsides, some big tools in the draft. Dylan Lesko, Aiden Smith, Brody Hopkins, all players that have upside here that could develop into pretty good major leaguers. I think especially when you look at, you know, Lesko and working for a full offseason with the Rays development, you have to like his chances of finding his form that made him one of the better prep pitching prospects, say that three times fast, over the last several years to come out of, you know, the high school ranks. So I'm interested to see how Lesko progresses under their tutelage, because I think that he could take some big steps forward, particularly with his command, because the stuff has always been there.
Well, you're getting a sneak peek at the coming discussions that we're going to have about our org talent rankings. I do feel like if I'm looking at this compared to the Red Sox, I'm taking the Rays. And again, this is one of those things that we have fun of discussing this. Right now, I know the Rays. We're going to dive into this. You know, I know the Rays better because I've been spending more time on it because I was doing their update. But I would say that I would agree with you. You could take the Red Sox top five, but I would say that's pretty close because I can take a Carson Williams, Marcelo Meyer. Like, there's not a whole lot of separation there. We both got a shortstop, both organizations. I'll take Junior Caminero, like, as a premium prospect, you know, top of this top 10 type guy. Xavier Isaac, I would say, is not as good as a Kyle Teal, you know, but okay. It's an interesting discussion there. But the thing that stands out to me about this Rays system is after they've added a Hopkins, after they've added an Aiden Smith, after they've added a, you know, Dylan Lesko, Horvath, you know, Baumeister, guys that they're in their org, like Trevor Harrison, who's at the back of the 30 and all. The depth of this system now, something that I really feel like had kind of suffered in recent years, like a couple of years ago, they had a lot of depth. And sometimes you can get, again, I've always said, depth can be overrated in a system, right? Depth of guys who you are on that, do I add them to the 40-man roster or not decision line is nice, but it's really not that important. Like there was when a couple of years ago, when we were talking about their depth, we were talking about guys like Miles Mastroboni. We were talking about guys like that, where it's like, you could add them, you could not. Cam Meisner, who's now, you know, who just made his big league debut. It was guys like that. And that's not impact. But I do look at this org right now. You mentioned Gary Gilhill. Like the thing that stands out about him is this is the guy who could be impactful. They haven't had, you know, I don't want to make it sound like it's forever because we just talked about Taj Bradley and Shane Boz, who are young big league starters. And they had Shane McClanahan, who was in the minors not that long ago. But it's been since them that they had an arm like this where you're like, okay, if I want to dream about this, this could be a dominating starter. And much as we talked about Christian Campbell, like if the pitching version of Christian Campbell, I would say this year, is Gary Gilhill. Gary Gilhill was not in our top 30 to start the season, and he's now a top 100 prospect. You know, he's been ranked in our top 100 now. And you could say, well, you know, and I'll raise my hand. I'm the one who did the Rays top 30, you know. But as I kind of asked people about it, pretty much the answer is, no, he really probably wasn't a top 30 prospect coming out of last year. His arm slot had kind of gotten low. Like his stuff wasn't particularly impressive. Like he just looked like a promising arm who really hadn't made any big strides. And then it just all clicked this year. The arm slot's back up. The stuff is significantly better than it was last year. He's athletic. There's everything you want to see. And when we talk about Taj Bradley, they're different pitchers, but I can't help but think about the Taj Bradley profile in that, like Gary Gilhill, Taj Bradley was not a premium, like a premium pitching prospect throughout his amateur career. Taj Bradley's case, he wasn't a pitcher until very, very late in his high school career. Gary Gilhill was a pitcher for a longer time, but he was a lower profile pitcher who's really the Rays love to do this. Like, hey, let's look at the attributes. Is there projectability here? Is there something we can work with? Yes. And they absolutely did. And then you throw in, like, we haven't even talked too much about Chandler Simpson, Trey Morgan. Those are two guys who are battling for the MILB batting champion, you know, to be the batting champion. And I bring that up not because the history of MILB batting champions is, you know, this long and illustrious history of Hall of Famer after Hall of Famer, but I bring it up because they're young guys doing it who have really intriguing other tools. Trey Morgan, it's got an interesting profile, but Trey Morgan might be the best defensive first baseman in the minors when he gets to play first base, because he's at times this year had to share time with Xavier Isaac. And Chandler Simpson is the fastest player in the minors, I would say. He led the minors in steals last year. He might lead it again this year. And by the way, while doing it this year, he might also hit 350. So it's a really interesting system. It's one that's, again, especially with these trades, has just gotten a whole lot deeper, a whole lot more upside, a whole lot more potential here. And one that kind of needed kind of a little bit of a reboot. It was getting, it was heading in a direction where it had kind of started to thin out. Pitching development especially, they didn't really have a whole lot of starting pitching prospects coming into this year. I can't say that now, especially after the trades. And that's kind of the perfect segue to our final of these four, five AL East teams that we're talking about. One that you do, which is, speaking of teams that could have used some talent influx at the deadline, Toronto Blue Jays were pretty high up on that list, and give them credit, that's what they did.
Yeah, they went out and they acquired, I think it was 12 or 13 prospects. You know, it certainly has been a difficult run for the Blue Jays this year at the major league level, at the minor league level. They've just been littered with arm injuries to all their top pitching prospects, a guy like Lander Marutis, who really was taking significant steps forward coming into the season. You know, added a breaking ball that looked like a legitimate pitch for him, something he didn't flash as much as an amateur. And, you know, he goes down, needs a hybrid surgery in terms of the brace plus a full Tommy John. The same deal with Brandon Barriera, who was their 2022 first round draft pick. We know that Ricky Tiedemann has gone down with, I think it's actually a brace surgery, but I've heard some debate about whether it was brace or full TJ. I think that was sort of a means to an end. We've been kind of waiting for that shoe to drop now for most of the last year. A PED suspension for Orelvis Martinez. And, you know, they were able to add an interesting pitcher in Trey Yesevich in the first round. But I think when you look at what they did at the deadline, they were able to add some reinforcements, some players that, you know, slid into their top 10 in Jake Bloss and Joey Laperfido, and, you know, even Charles McAdoo. Now, they are the worst system probably in the AL East. I don't think I'm saying anything crazy at this point. But at least this is moving up toward the top half of the bottom half of teams. They're probably more in that 16 to 20 range as opposed to the 25 to 30 range like they were coming into the season.
Let me interrupt you on that just for a second. If we rewound this, we back this up to a month and a half ago, pre-draft, pre-trades, I would say they were bottom five.
They were easy bottom five. I don't know if they're 30th, but they're probably closer to 30 than they were to 25. I'll say that. Especially when you sort of look at some of the other, the injuries and just the talented players haven't necessarily played over the last year for them. So I think the draft, but also the trade deadline was huge for them. And being able to turn in some assets that were expiring and pieces that weren't part of the future there, whether it was Justin Turner, whether it was Yusei Kikuchi, being able to turn those guys into prospects that have some runway, some close to the majors guys that could contribute for this team down the stretch here in the summer, you know, or even early next year without having to trade away Vlad Guerrero Jr., without having to trade away Bo Bichette, Gausman, some of these other guys, I think was a huge win for them, because it's not a bad major league roster when they're healthy and everything's together. They now seem to have a little bit more of a direction and actually have some young controllable players and assets that they didn't have a year ago. And I think that's been a major concern, just because the last couple of drafts coming into this one haven't turned in the amount of impact prospects that I think they were hoping. Now, Namala has certainly bounced back in a big way since he returned in late June to Dunedin, but things had really gone about as, it was almost the opposite of the Red Sox. The Red Sox went about as good as it could possibly go in the farm system. Things went about as bad as they could possibly go for the Blue Jays, just across the entire organization.
And see, okay, this is where I'm going to be the Debbie Downer portion of this, in that I do look at this overall though, and still look at it and say, if you look at where this organization was in 2020, I'm kind of shocked where it's ended up. And I mean that from the standpoint of like, I will raise my hand. Like, I remember having discussions during kind of the pandemic, and we're talking about where the Rays were and where the Orioles were and where the Blue Jays were. And my question at that time was, is, okay, you know, with the Orioles that you've got Adley Rutschman, you knew with the Rays you had Wander Franco, and obviously that was for off the field reasons that's ended up being derailed, you know, as he faces criminal charges now. But with the Blue Jays, you had what looked like a really young core of potential stars. You had Vlad, you know, Jr. and Bo Bichette. You had a pitching staff that looked like it was set up to really be special, you know, really effective. You've had the emergence of guys like Alejandro Kirk and all. And you kind of felt like that this was a team that was really on its way potentially to something. And now you look at it, and I do look at it and say, okay, time is running out. Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is having the season that if you're a Blue Jays fan, you're like, this is our dream, is we want to see seasons like this from Vlad Jr. He's having it. But the problem is that there's almost no one else in their lineup who's anywhere close to being above average regular. Bo Bichette was having, you know, battled injuries, but he's having a terrible season by his, you know, standards. Alejandro Kirk's been a revelation, but he is also like raising the concerns of when you talk about really big catchers, they sometimes can age poorly. And I hope that we're not saying that about a 25-year-old, but I do have kind of, you know, some concerns that unfortunately maybe that's the, you know, maybe that's the case. And then you look at this pitching staff, and I mean, if you said that a pitching staff that started the year with Berrios, Gausman, Bassett, Kikuchi, you'd be like, that should be, you know. And by the way, a couple of years ago, Alec Manoa, we'd be talking about also, is like, yeah, okay, that they're set. And it's almost like none of them, you know, are really having the year. Like, I guess to put a big league bow on this to wrap this up, like, is this a team? I would assume that the Blue Jays kind of restock a little bit to try to make another push next year, especially by holding on to kind of their controllable talent that's still there, but their stars. But is this a team that's headed towards a rebuild or headed towards a playoff push next year?
I mean, it's tough because it's the AL East too, right? I think a lot of it's going to come down to, can Alek Manoah find the guy that he was in 2022? I mean, he finished third in the Cy Young voting, looked like a young ace in the making. He hasn't been that guy now for a couple of years. He's been on the sidelines most of the time. He's battled injury. He's battled weight concerns. There's been concerns about the attitude just in terms of his focus. I think some of that stuff has come to pass a little bit. It's really, really been more injury type of stuff this year. But George Springer's another year older. I think Bo Bichette, it wouldn't shock me if Bichette is potentially moved this offseason, maybe for some reinforcements. I think it's a bit of a retooling. The one thing that you can say about this front office, and sometimes, you know, this is the negative side of being an aggressive front office, going out and trying to get major league, you know, talent and stars. They've spent a lot of money in free agency. They've gone out and maybe overpaid for some players like Springer and others, Jose Berrios a few years ago, and haven't necessarily gotten the return on investment. And so there's some concern there that a lot of those guys are going to be another year older. I think they do plan to continue to build around Vlad Guerrero Jr. I think long-term he wants to be there. I think an extension probably gets done. But the bigger question is, you know, you look at a guy like Gabriel Moreno, who they moved. Of the three catchers that they had three big league catchers in Moreno, Jansen, and then Kirk. Only Kirk remains. And, you know, I think if you could go back in time, they would not want to trade Moreno. They'd want to hold on to him. And we maybe have passed on that Dalton Varsho move. And Varsho hasn't been a bad player for them, but a lot of his value is derived from his ability to be a really standout, you know, center fielder. He hasn't hit as much as they wanted him to hit, as much as they've needed him to hit. They've been kind of lucked out by a couple of reinforcements that were sort of afterthoughts. And a guy like David Schneider, who was a 28th round pick back in 2017, and Spencer Horwitz, who's a 24th round pick back in 2019. it's been guys like that that have developed and become good players for them. It hasn't been the first round guys. And if you go back and look at their last 5, 6, 7 years in terms of their first round picks, they haven't gotten a lot of value out of those guys. And I don't think a single one of them outside of Manoah has really had any impact at the major league level for the organization. So, you know, they're in a weird spot because in some ways I think they do need to retool, but they still have a lot of money sunk into some veteran players here that, you know, there's some questions about. I mean, George Springer is going to be 35 years old next season. And, you know, Kevin Gausman is going to be 34 years old. Barrios is going to be 31. These guys are older. Chris Bassett's going to be 36. So it's an older team too. And especially when you look at the impact players in the core, and you have to wonder, even on the trade market, if they're able to sell some of those guys, what are the returns really going to be?
It's again, the AL East is always a fascinating division. It's fascinating right now. And again, it's one that's, there's a lot happening. So that's one down. We have five to go. We hope you enjoy all six of these division by division kind of state of the organization podcast. For Jeff, I'm JJ. So long, everybody.
You sit in traffic now, but later, there's an ice cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, all your patience is paid out in gold. You remain calm through honks, bumper to bumper, and people yelling.
Come on, move!
You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.